On today's episode, we're joined by Christian Kromann, the CEO of SimCorp. SimCorp is a leading financial technology company providing solutions to the investment management community. Christian recently oversaw the sale of SimCorp to Deutsche Börse for over $4 billion. We look forward to hearing from Christian today. Thank you very much for joining us on today's show. And we are delighted to welcome Christian Kromann, the CEO of SimCorp. I'm co-hosting today's episode with my colleague Magnus Berkel, who leads a lot of our infrastructure and technology work here in Europe. Welcome both.
Thank you very much. We've been looking forward to it.
Christian, why don't you start with a brief intro to your role and the company that you lead today?
Yeah, thank you very much. So I'm the CEO of SimCorp. So what is SimCorp? SimCorp is a financial technology company really focused on the investment management industry on a global scale. We are around 3,500 colleagues nowadays, serving around 800 clients around the globe, literally around the globe. And we've been doing actually it for 53 years. So it's super exciting to work with a company that has been for so long in an ever-changing sector of the financial industry.
Awesome, and great to have you. I always like to just rewind the tape. You know, you weren't born into this role, right? You didn't start and just end up as a senior leader at a cutting edge technology firm. Talk to me a little bit about the journey. Risk manager at Nordea, your times at FIS. Like what were the early chapters of your career like?
Yeah, I think in reality it started way back when math was one of the things that I enjoyed the most in school. There was kind of, you could have a result, you could put two lines on it. It was easy to understand whether it was right or wrong. So I spent time on that, and also kind of when I choose education, I chose something that was related to math. Eventually, at least for me, I didn't want to use math only. I wanted to apply it to something. And kind of in the mid-90s was really where the sophistication of the financial industry started to take off. Derivatives was really taking off. You had the very kind of early stage pieces of software that could calculate sophisticated risk capabilities and all of these things. So I've really found a nice link between math, finance, and then technology, I would say relatively early on in my career. Then I ended up working in Nordea, that at that point was quite a sophisticated financial institution in the Nordic countries. They were quite ambitious on the derivative side. So it meant that because they were investing a lot in sophisticated financial instruments, they also had to invest in sophisticated risk capabilities. And I was lucky enough to sit in the middle of that, doing a lot of these things with a great team for the first time ever, developing real value at risk capabilities for sophisticated derivatives. And that was really that was the embryo.
Paint the picture for me a bit more, Christian. You know, SunGard, that era, like roughly how many employees, what's it like in there? Like everyone's got an image now, right, of a technology company. You've got, you know, beautiful pine wood behind you and everything's super slick and technology is now at the pinnacle. But back then, what was it like? Paint the picture of, you know, SunGard and your role back then.
Both the sector as well as SunGard there was kind of early days. There was a lot of new technology on being invented, and reality was that many of these technologies was really early stage. And people also had to learn how to use technology. SunGard at that point was quite acquisitive, so they bought quite a lot of those applications and actually kept them on their own. So it was I wouldn't call it the Wild West, but there was a lot going on for the first time where people started to understand how to use technology at a bigger space. The particular part of SunGard I joined was a kind of very European-oriented, sophisticated platform. And we had a small office in Copenhagen. We were part of a big international group. So I spent probably the best part of 10 years traveling around implementing systems at European financial institutions, right? You learned crazy amount very early on. And I would say even to this day, even though I'm probably rusty, from an implementation point of view, I understand and appreciate the complexity of implementing sophisticated technologies for firms like that. And I have to say, I still use that even in CEO to CEO dialogues, because if you don't understand the finer details of doing such a transformation, then
I don't think you provide enough value.
It's interesting, right? Because I think if I imagine some of the CEOs at some of the other big publicly listed companies, they may not have, as you described, the same kind of dirt under the fingernails, right? When you talk about your story at the start, you've really been at the coalface and understanding what's happening at the front end. So that sounds like a pretty valuable foundation. Talk to me from how you go from there to then ending up in the seat that you're in today.
Yeah, I would say kind of after doing this for almost a decade, I think two things happened. I got into general management as part of that. I started to figure out what does Christian actually like doing. And I liked doing a bit of both through those years. I liked the general management, try to motivate and lead teams. But I still really enjoyed the close client contact. So that was really what my job was for a period. I actually ended up being more on the sales side.
Yeah.
Because reality was that also the profession of sales also changed quite a lot. You really had to be a value add in your sales process, and having that consultative selling, which requires a domain knowledge, kind of fitted my skills really well. And one thing you quickly learn is if you wanna do something in an American driven firm, sales is typically the road to the top, right? You need to demonstrate you can move the needle on the top line. And SunGard, as it was called those days, was an extreme sales-driven organization. It was the sales leaders that was making a lot of the decisions. And I followed that trend.
Yeah.
Up until a point where SunGard was taken private. And through those years, a big part of the taking private was to consolidate a lot of their businesses. So I was so fortunate that I ended up playing quite a significant role in them consolidating all the pieces they had in the capital markets front to back space for quite a period. And it was super exciting because it was really all about getting several more distinct teams to work together as a larger group. That was also really where my career took me outside Europe, understanding how to work in the Asian Pacific, also understanding how to navigate inside a very North American oriented company. I had a stint in Paris with the family as we integrated a couple of key businesses together. And in the end of SunGard days, I was running a team of more than 1,000 people in multiple locations. So that whole dynamic between building technology for a sophisticated organization on a global scale, I really learned a lot a lot through these years.
So it sounds like a huge part of your growth journey was actually through that era at SunGard. And it sounds like quite a rounded and complete curriculum, right? From someone who was skilled at the implementation, a practitioner on the product end, to then becoming a salesperson through some managerial work. It's actually quite a rounded curriculum through that era.
I think it's not necessarily particularly about SunGard, but I had a conversation with my sons the other day that are going through their kind of educational journey, and we debated, is it good to start in a small company and you kind of get a lot of knowledge in a short time, or should you actually start in a large company where you can actually move around and try to really get things under. And I think you can probably argue, but I was really happy that I spent so many years in a company where they were willing to give young people real responsibility and let them try out something that you probably would never have been given in a smaller company, right? So that's at least an advice I would give to other people. Make sure you get yourself the opportunity to learn many things. And obviously, and another thing is, I was I think I spent a lot of time figuring out, did I want to become kind of domain expert and really go down that track?
Yeah.
Or did I want to become a leader and a manager of people? And in the end, I, as I probably said a few times, I enjoy the nerdiness of our business, but I certainly chose the managerial track relatively early on in my career.
I wish I had a seat at your kitchen table for that conversation. I'd love to have chimed in. I guess my take is you get very different things from the small company and the larger company, right? The small company you're forced to do, right? You've got to be able to prove you can get things done in those each of those different roles. And at the bigger company, you probably need to learn to navigate, right? How do you manage upwards and transcend? So it's I think it's a fascinating debate. Let me move you on. Talk to me about your entry to SimCorp. Talk to me about your SimCorp.
Yeah, there was a bit of a stint in between. So when SunGuard got sold to FIS, I felt it was probably a good point to decide kind of after 16, almost 17 years, is that where you're going to spend the rest of your life, or what is up and down? And I had a long discussion both with my wife and with myself, is now, what do you want to do, right? And I felt that I wanted to become a CEO was part of the path I wanted to pursue. And I was also, quite humble to that fact. So I wanted to do that in a smaller company first. And that took me to a 3-year stint in a company called Tia Technology. They do a complete platform, but just for the insurance part of an insurance company, right? So policy management, claims management, all the complicated calculations, which, you know, funny enough, if you look at it of distantly enough, it reminds very much of the processes of a financial institution. But it was still a technology company. The evolution was the same. So that that kind of, once you sit at the end of the table, you realize it's different than other managerial jobs. Mm. Whether the company is big or small doesn't really matter. You kind of mentally make that change.
Top of the pyramid, no one you can pass the book to.
Exactly. And that then eventually SimCorp came along and indicated that there was a very, very interesting opportunity there. So I actually joined SimCorp as COO for a period of time where I had the opportunity to kind of learn the company inside out, side by side with that, at that point, CEO. So I ran the client-facing part of that, gave me an opportunity to spend a lot of time with clients, understand what was really under their skin and what was going on. Unfortunately, it was more or less at the same time as COVID kind of came out. So it also became some years of, I wouldn't call it crisis management, but obviously the world was changing relatively rapidly, and we went from not being able to travel to see clients to sitting at home and everything that we've been through. And then eventually the board asked me if I wanted to succeed Klaus, that was the CEO, and for my part, that was a very exciting offer, and obviously something I've never regretted since. It's been great. 3.5 years in now, a bit more than 3 years.
Excellent. I'm going to shift in the conversation a little bit and bring my colleague Magnus in, who leads a lot of work that we do in the investment management community. I'd invite you both to just explore a little bit what's going on in the buy side community that SimCorp focuses on. What some of the challenges and opportunities that are particularly around software technology, particularly around some of the things that you provide, Christian. So maybe Christian, you want to kick us off on how you see things, and for it to Magnus as well.
I think there's some kind of trends that are kind of reoccurring from time to time, and then I think there's some mega trends that that I just want to reflect a little bit on. So I think if I should kind of, the thing that has affected us the most, if you will, overall, is that the last 5 years there's been a fundamental shift in how people consume what we have to offer. I think COVID actually in the end ended up playing a large role in that change. And I always share the anecdote that when I started in August 19, so I had roughly 6 months before the world changed. I managed to travel around, and yes, North America was clearly on the path that they wanted software as a service. Otherwise, you couldn't sell there. But the rest of the world was almost to the other extreme. And I remember conversations in continental Europe, German-speaking part of Europe, where people said, never, ever will that happen. We're never going to consume what you have to offer as a software as a service. And the same people, more or less, 12 to 18 months later, said, well, we need to have it now. Reality, of course, was that business continuity questions arose from the COVID situation. And at the same time, we also started to see emerging cyber risk concerns, et cetera. Right? So for us, going from, yes, we had something a bit more tactical for the North American part of the world, to that software as a service was the entry point to the entire industry, plus the fact that we had a large client base that needed to move the needle on that conversation, fundamentally changed what we needed to do as a company, right? So that has been a huge transformative journey that we are still in the path on. We now have more than 100 clients that have gone that route. And we have now large-scale clients everywhere in the world. So I would say we now have the full setup, but we still have quite a few clients that needs to make the move and those things. So from a leadership point of view, from a cultural change point of view for SimCorp, that has by far been the biggest one. Then secondary, if you say, and somewhat links into some of the more kind of reoccurring themes, is obviously we've been now through a period where interest went up. AUMs got under pressure because, all right, people said, well, if I can get 5% putting the money in the bank account, maybe that's okay.
Yeah.
AUM was going down at a relatively fast pace. Still a lot of buy-side firms have a cost base that have nearly not been optimized because they haven't done enough investments into technology. To now, yes, all right, the interest rate is now down again. We see some inflows coming back. But nevertheless, I think the sector had a bit of a shock that now they make realize that whoever, the part of the sector that haven't done the technology investments the last 5 to 10 years, need to do something drastic around that. And that obviously, if you're a technology firm, is great news. But we also have to be aware that the way they look at it is, of course, a traditional, you know, what features and functions do you have? But it's also a conversation about how fast can you get me there? How can you standardize the way I work? And all of those things. And out of that has actually emerged some hybrid offerings. I would say we call them business services. And what we mean by that is services we can perform on for our customers on our own software. So we're basically performing work that they in principle could do, but we do it on their installation, on our software. Sometimes that's called partial outsourcing because it's a technology-driven outsourcing as compared to a traditional BPO. So some of these things are really evolving from the fact that the industry is looking at technology as a solution more than just, hey, let's take the work out because we don't know how to solve it. And that's, we're quite excited about that. We have a bit more than 20 clients that are going that route. But out of the 800, that's obviously still only a fraction. And if you kind of take that entire journey and put it together between moving from a traditional technology company delivering a piece of tech, plus actually sourcing that through software as a service model, and now adding business services on top, that's a big change. And it requires a substantial better understanding of how our clients are working than what we had going back. Because if you want to educate and give them standards, it means that we need to have people that actually have worked through those standardization as clients. And you can also see the population we now have, which I think when we started, we were around 1,600 people. So we added close to 2,000 people in 5 years is a from a leadership point of view, a fantastic opportunity to change the both change the culture and also the mindset of the company. But maybe I pause a little bit there and let Magnus say something as well.
Yeah, thanks, Christian. And, you know, look, from our perspective, what you are describing comes at a pivotal point for the industry, right? As you say, the cost pressure is getting immense for your clients, and the need to deploy technology, like the technology SimCorp is offering, is becoming a critical success factor in their own businesses and operating models. But on the other hand, we also see the competitive environment getting much fiercer, right? And your clients want to focus on what's really differentiating for them. They want to differentiate on the client service side. They want to differentiate on the investment side. And they don't want to necessarily deal with certain activities anymore, as you've outlined, with business services, right? And they are looking for new ways to construct their operating model, much leaner ways to run their operating model, hybrid ways to have their operating model. And we were quite intrigued by SimCorp One that you launched a couple of months ago, and sort of how you're trying to bring this all together for clients. So why don't you walk us quickly through what is the notion, what's the idea behind SimCorp One?
Yeah, thanks for that, Magnus. So maybe we go just a little bit back in history just for a couple of seconds, right? So as I said, SimCorp is now 53 years old. Of course, there's been many iterations of what we do over those years, but I would say relatively early on in the story of SimCorp, the people and the founders got together there. They basically put their minds together about the basic fact that in order to succeed in the buy side, you need an eyeball, right? That was the idea.
And Christian, just for the laymans in the audience, just explain quickly the eyeball.
The big part of this industry is in speaking in acronyms that nobody understands what we talk about. Investment book of record, and that has a sister that's called the accounting book of record. And the idea behind that term is that you have a true view of what is going on in your investment portfolio. And the idea behind that was, we kind of stuck to that. The whole idea was, if you can create a real-time environment where all your positions, all your reconciliations, all your corporate actions for any asset class is always up to date in the investment book of record, then you have a much better opportunity to make the right decision. That was the idea. Obviously, when they started building this, the world was substantially more simple. Alternatives was not a thing, and derivatives and all the things which we just talked about. But SimCorp has stuck to that fundamental point that we natively want to build one single platform, one piece of technology that supports the entire value chain for all asset classes. That's what we still do. And we still have a substantial part of our developers making sure that always covers the entire value chain and always covers all asset classes. And on an anecdotal basis, we decided to build alternatives into the platform natively and not go out and buy a platform. Anyway, that's the starting point. The philosophy here is that it needs to become a platform, right? And that's really the idea, and that's where we're building from now. Over the years, we've done a few acquisitions, one for client reporting, kind of extending that capability. One for data management, extending that capability. And data management is, in that context, all the inbound data you need to make sure that that SimCorp works for the eyeball. The eyeball is correct. Obviously, if the corporate actions that come in are wrong, then the eyeball is also wrong, and so forth and so vital. And then finally, now as part of the Deutsche Börse family, we merged Axioma, the risk capability, also into SimCorp. So on one side, we still have one platform that does all of it as a foundational value proposition. Then we got additional capabilities that adds to the value. The philosophy and what we want to communicate to our clients is that the fact that it's one platform gives them a lot of benefits as you go through. Then you have to say, okay, the platform, the software as a service, the standards, the capability around business services and everything that goes with it, plus the fact that there's a different capabilities, became extremely difficult to explain in a world where we maintained individual brand names. And that was what we've done. And we felt that the fact that we've gone from traditional technology to a standardized SaaS, plus that we have extended to risk and other things, warranted a proper way of packaging that, both from a pricing, delivery model, standardization, and all of that. But frankly, also, and I know I now share that in the public, we also need to change people's minds from the point of view that we come very far from where we've been 5 years ago. And all of that is encapsulated in the SimCorp One message to the market. So on one point, we are saying to the existing clients, let's find a path for you through that. And none of it is re-implementation, right? That's very important. You're staying on the eyeball that you started on. But we also needed to explain to the markets that are not currently a client, hey, there's a conversation to be had. Why don't we have a chat about it?
There's a lot powerful in there, Christian, for me, because I feel too often there's a lazy view of the world that every answer has to be software. Software, 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 software. To every single problem, there is a software answer. And what you lay out in SimCorp One, which I think is powerful, but I think the world needs to go on a journey to understand, is take the client lens that you talk about, the problems that Magnus described. You know, you look at it in its entirety. It needs a mix, right? That mix of the software with the services, the support, the standardization. And that might be that next frontier, but I there's always this lagging view, and I'm going to lazily blame it on the investors, but the investor view that, like, I need a purity of my revenue earning streams. It needs to be software only. And heaven forbid if there was going to be a touch of services next to it, it would dilute the quality. But you take the client end situation you described, the problem you described you're solving, and it comes pretty clear, right? Like, software is a key component, but it needs some other stuff around it. But it feels like you're probably at the frontier, right? I feel more people will need to follow this pattern in other industries, but it feels like you're on the frontier here, it feels. I don't know if that's a fair observation.
Wow, that's obviously in line with what we think, right? But I think what is also quite important for us in that context is that's even amplified through a Deutsche Börse ownership is the neutrality of what we do, right? In the end, what we really want to give our clients is options. Starting with having the platform, you can then choose what custodian you want to work, you can choose who you want to invest through, you can basically choose what you want. And to that addition, we actually build an ecosystem of around 130 fintech companies that we kind of offer as integrated into SimCorp. So you can choose, you know, who do you want to use for EMS? Who do you want to, those kind of things. But the whole idea is, once you buy into the platform, if you buy into a slice, or whether you go the full Monty, if you will, doesn't really matter. It should give you, once you've done that, you have access to choose your own path through the operating model changes you go to. And there, I think we are, both because who we are, and the fact that we're neutral to asset managers, custodians, whatever you want to say, and how we built the eyeball from the starting point, I think we like to think we are on the forefront.
Thanks, Christian. And what you describe, I think, you know, when we look at the market, that front to back nature that you are laying out is quite powerful for the operating model, the simplification. And then the optionality you as a client can have by picking certain things that you want to standardize, certain things that you want to outsource. But there's one element that we think is very powerful for the future. Ultimately, in the investment management world, we are talking about data, right? And we are not a car company that, you know, is building and putting parts together, right? We are shuffling data from one function to the other function, right? And, you know, everything is dematerialized and it's all about data in that front-to-back construct. So what would be interesting to hear is, you know, in that SimCorp One, in that front-to-back construct, what's the next frontier, in particular when we think around data analytics, when we think about Gen AI generally? What's your view? What's the next frontier looking like in 5 years from now?
And that's a good question, right? We actually just kind of in the middle of looking at what the world could look like in 2030, which is far out in both technology and the financial world. Of course, AI is the first two letters that pops up, right? It's hard to not think about that. I would say for me, there's at least two conversations in that we are currently spending time on, or maybe three, if you will. There's obviously the co-pilots of this world. So all the cloud-native capabilities we built, we obviously natively built Copilot into it. It gives a better user experience and all of those things that is great, and we see great uptake in all of that. I would say, given that we have all the data sitting in the investment book of record and the accounting book of record already, that's a wonderful starting point for more sophisticated AI as well. Can you optimize your settlement process? Can you do better reconciliation? All of these things. Reality there, and it's potentially a question to the industry, if you will, to have proper AI, you obviously need to train your models. And the more data you can train it on, the better the models become. But let's face it, we are operating with the most sophisticated and most regulated part of the industry. So sharing data for training AI models across organizations is a very difficult conversation. So we have kind of a conundrum here where everybody wants to have sophisticated training for their models, but nobody are willing to share data. And it's really something that I think everybody is aware of it, but at the same time, everybody is super concerned on data compliance for the right reasons, right? Let's face it, we want financial institutions to be regulated. But for an AI situation, it's interesting. And obviously, SimCorp do not own data. We are a technology firm. We only have our clients' data. We don't have it. The clients have their data. And we now need to figure out how we solve that problem for the industry, as we go forward.
I'm going to move us on to the final chapter of our conversation, Christian. Just again, listeners really benefit from listening to some of the reflections that successful senior leaders have had. So I wanted to invite you to share one or some of the most interesting challenges that you faced from anywhere on that journey that you described, right? What would be some of the things that you'd call out that you think could be a point of note to others who are earlier on in their career journeys?
Yeah, I would say on a personal level, Obviously, figuring out what you're good at was for me kind of an evolution. I know it sounds like a cliche, but I never really had a plan, but I always knew what I wanted next, if you will, if that makes sense. I feel probably the biggest kind of, it's probably a mindset change. I talked a bit about before about then being in the end of the table and kind of taking that responsibility in, both emotionally also, but also what do you do about it, as has been probably an evolution over time. I'd say leading global teams, but also having clients globally takes time to get under your skin. The world is just extremely different. They might at the tin look like they're all doing the same, but buying behaviors are different. Communication is different, and getting, I remember at some point I said it was really a desire for me to be able to have clients in everywhere in the world. And I'm glad I made that investment because I can see that is benefiting me now. And it's probably two things. It's the navigate in an international world, but also have the appreciation for the differences. And SimCorp is now more global than ever. Leading such a team is not something you just do out of the gate. I'd say probably on a personal level, finding the right balance between work and private life is a ever-changing challenge, right? It's fair to say I've had a very supporting and patient family through the years. That's certainly something I recommend, that instead of not talking about it, that people talk with their families about what's going on. To let's face it, it's not a 9-to-5 job. It is literally your brain is always working at some point, right? And it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
You're really selling this breakfast table image at your household. You get to talk about long-term career options. You get to talk about the challenges the asset manager industry face. But jokes aside, let me just go there for me a little bit. Like, what do you do outside of work that, you know, either a hobby or an interest that helps you kind of helps you unwind or helps you focus when you come back, right, into your high-pressured seat?
I do obviously try to stay fit, which is necessary when you have to attend so many dinners and stuff. I always bring my running shoes. When you travel a lot, just the fact that you had a run around the city, you actually feel you've been where instead of just going into the offices. I enjoy that very much. But probably the passion is music. I've always had a great passion for music and as a whole, but also to play music. So I'm a drummer, and I've been playing drums since I was 15, and still enjoy it very much.
And what are you drumming along to when you're releasing after a tough day?
A little bit on the harder side, but the funny thing is that what I like to listen to is not necessarily the same thing that is fun to drum.
Sure. Because interesting.
You want something that, you know, I've had plenty of pieces of music where if I played it myself, I would never have listened to it. But once I got into it and understand the dynamics of the song, suddenly it kind of opens up. So that's really fun.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. Last question. We like to invite guests to throw the spotlight. So call out an individual, a company, preferably not your own, that's impressing you right now that you want listeners and viewers to pay attention to.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So I thought a bit about it. Right now, I knew you would ask me that question. So I think there's a couple of categories, but what has always fascinated me is people that can perform in separate contexts, right? Meaning that I think one of your other interviews I really liked, because performing and succeeding in a particular company is depending on many things. As a CEO, you can do everything right, but the circumstances are somehow prohibiting that. Or the other way around, you can just be at the right place at the right time and you're seen as the savior of the new world, right? So it always fascinated me when people could do it several times. And there's not in the corporate world, there's many examples of that. But funny enough, some of these things I find in the sports world.
Yeah.
There was Phil Jackson, right, that managed to take several teams on the basketball scene through to winning by applying his methods in different contexts. That fascinates me a lot. And in the soccer world, probably Pep Guardiola has done it, kind of grown his own philosophy around all that. In the music industry, there's a few examples of that, whereas who used to be the drummer of Nirvana is now the lead guitarist and singer of Foo Fighters, right? The fact that you can do these things over and over again, and there's plenty of people that has done that that I could point to, but I don't think there's anybody in particular there. Of course, on the other side, most of my career I've been operating companies that was already created, right? So I've taken them from one level to the other. And I would say obviously it's natural to look into what's going on in the AI space now. Front runners of those companies having the guts to believe in something that people don't even understand they need has always fascinated me as well. But I'm not really the person to single out individual names. But doing it over and over again is always what gives me that impresses me, and is also for me a clear goal with my career to see if I can actually make an impact in more than one time.
That's such a beautiful way of looking at it, actually. The repeatability and the transportability. I think the world doesn't pay enough attention to the way you just frame things, right? I go back to like the ancient times, and they always seem to kind of wax lyrical about the polymaths, right? Who could do all of these things. But we've got ourselves in an era now where it is very single and individual focus. So thank you for sharing that. It's gonna change the way I look at review things now. So that's awesome. And I will I will look out for you on LinkedIn when your next role is the drummer of a band that's going on world tour. That's
I had to succeed in my professional career because I'm not that good at drumming. So
awesome. Well, look, Christian, thank you for being so generous with your time. Magnus, thank you for joining and sharing your views. It's been wonderful to have this conversation. So I appreciate you coming on.
Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you, Christian. Thank you, Edmund.